Looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank? The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look in a premium gold luxe packaging. It's all about panoramic volume and fully fanned out lashes. With its tapered brush, the new Panorama Mascara catches every single lash, giving you the false lash look without any of the hassle. Say goodbye to clumps and flakes, because this mascara is specially formulated to resist them all day with up to 24-hour wear. And the best part? It performs better than Luxe mascaras at only a fraction of the cost. You can buy Panorama Mascara on Amazon today.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey, welcome to another edition of Talking Metal, and also an edition of a podcast episode of Mars Attacks with Victor. Victor, how are you?
Good. How are you doing, Mark?
Good, man. Thanks for joining me back on Talking Metal. I know the last time you were on, we got a real great response. So we are doing another episode here, which kind of helps me because, as a lot of you listeners know, John is very busy with stuff, and it's sometimes kind of hard to get him on the show. And I know a lot of Talking Metal listeners are missing John, but I do feel that it's great when we have Victor join us, and you really kind of bring something different to the table. So again, thanks for being on.
Sure, no problem. It's always a pleasure to come on and, you know, lend my opinions or comments to the show.
Excellent. And I am here in New York City today I came into work early. I'm in an edit room here at IFC recording this before my day starts. It's about 9:30 over here, and Victor is over in Spain. And what's the time difference? Is it 6 hours, Victor?
Now it's actually 5 hours because we haven't done the spring forward yet. That will take place this weekend.
Ah, I got you. Huh, interesting. Cool. And you are doing a lot of great episodes with Mars Attacks. You had taken a break for a while, and then you came back. What, has it been 2 new episodes hit recently, or was it 3? I'm not sure.
We had the Classic Albums column focusing on Slayer Seasons in the Abyss, and then we did another episode which featured Mitch LaFon from Brave Lords fame, and he's now on Pure Gain Audio, and he's got a few podcasts of his own as well. But he's doing this fundraiser called A World with Heroes. It's a Kiss tribute album, sort of celebrating the 40th anniversary of Kiss. But at the same time, what he's trying to do is raise money for this, I guess in the States would be considered like a hospice facility. This is where his father-in-law went right before passing away, so they're very appreciative of the attention that they received, and as a result, they wanted to raise some money for this specific facility.
Cool. And yeah, John and I actually mentioned this fundraiser tribute record on one of the last episodes of Talking Metal, but we will again today have links up in today's show notes on talkingmetal.com where you can go and get involved with the fundraiser and give some money to Mitch's cause. It sounds like there's going to be a lot of great artists, big name artists, I might add, involved in this Kiss tribute. And Mitch, the little I know of him, he seems like a good guy. I've heard him numerous times on your podcast. I'm friends with him on Facebook. And I actually watched like a YouTube show with him and like two other guys talking about Kiss, which was kind of interesting. Now, is that called? I think that's the Three Sides of the Coin show or something, because it was three different guys, Mitch being one of them.
Yeah, it's Mitch, Michael Brandvold, who used to be, I guess he was one of the first people involved with Kiss Online. apparently. Okay. And Tommy's the third guy. They always refer to him as the real estate guy. So, I mean, I don't know how true that is. I honestly haven't dug in to find out what Tommy actually does. But they have some interesting discussions. They had an episode recently where they interviewed Bruce Kulick, which was pretty funny because Mitch is a great guy, but he's sometimes really opinionated with certain topics, and it's pretty funny hearing Bruce sort of put him in his place, per se. So
interesting.
It's interesting.
Cool, I'll have to check that out. Cool, well, Kiss is alive and well. We had Tommy Thayer on the Talking Metal podcast here recently, and I was kind of excited to hear that maybe there'll be another Kiss album down the road. You know, they've done Sonic Boom and Monster all within the last 3 years, two brand new records, and it sounds like they might not stop there. Tommy didn't give a definite, but he said that it's a possibility that new music could come out of Kiss, or new album could come out of Kiss sometime in the future. So it would be, I think, you know, they're obviously in the, I'd say, the twilight of their career, having started 40 years ago, but you know, there was a long kind of break where they didn't put out any new studio records, and I kind of think it would be cool for them to go out, if you will, because let's face it, they're not going to be doing this another 40 years. They've been doing this 40 years already. The, you know, Simmons and Stanley into their 60s at this point. It'd be kind of cool if they gave us a bunch of new records before finally calling it a day. I think we were talking about this at one point, if not on a podcast. Maybe it was on the phone when I was chatting with you. When Monster first came out, I was kind of not sure about it, and I was a big fan of Sonic Boom. I can now honestly tell you, and I told this to Tommy in the interview that I did with him, that I think I like Monster. I definitely like Monster better than Sonic Boom, and I think it's just a great record. And what's your feeling on Monster at this point after listening for 4 months at this point?
I actually had the opposite reaction. You know, I listened to Sonic Boom and I was like, eh, you know, there are some really cool songs on it, but I felt that, especially with the Gene songs, they weren't sort of up to par with some of the other tracks on there. But I said from the start, if this is the first stepping stone to what's coming next out of Kiss, I'm all for it, you know, and I think Monster really went far and above what I expected. I know a lot of people in hindsight are saying they should have had a producer, they should have had this, they should have had that. I think the album sounds fine the way it is. Gene has this like gritty bass tone, almost Lemmy-ish. The song Shout Mercy, which I absolutely love off of that, reminds me of some stuff that Motorhead has done in the past. And I think that overall, outside of maybe two tracks that I'm not very fond of, I think the rest of the album is really good and quite possibly one of the best albums that they've released. I mean, if you include some of the work that they've done in the 80s, if we go all the way back to, say, like a Creatures of the Night, I mean, I would hold Monster up there with definitely a Revenge, things along those lines. I mean, is it the best thing they've released? No, but taken into consideration where the band is at, as you're saying, in the twilight of their career, taking into consideration some of the other stuff they've released, I think it's a very strong output from them. And I mean, I'm looking forward to them releasing additional music, and hopefully, you know, I'm sure they still have, you know, things that they still haven't, you know, released in the box set that they released a few years back. I'm saying a few years back, it's almost 10 years now, I believe. But I'm sure there are more tracks out there that they could release, and who knows? Eddie and Alex Van Halen seem to be in great moods now. Maybe they can finally release the demos that they did with Gene, the Calling Dr. Love and a few other tracks that they recorded around that era.
That would be awesome, and I know a lot of people would love to hear those. I definitely get the vibe that it's the Van Halen camp that has prevented those from being released. I don't know if Gene has ever gone on record as saying that, but I think he has, actually. But Gene Simmons, if you don't know, discovered Van Halen, one of the first people to kind of take them under his wing, back when he was a superstar in the 70s already with Kiss. He took Van Halen into the studio and demoed some songs with them, and even, I guess, did some playing with them. There's rumors there's even versions of Kiss songs with Alex and Eddie playing on them, right?
Yeah, the rumor is Calling Dr. Love, and I don't know if Ladies' Room was another one, but it was, and I might be getting my albums mixed up there, but if I'm not mistaken, it was around the Rock and Roll Over time period, so around 76, if I'm not mistaken.
Cool.
And apparently the whole deal there is that he wanted to sort of sell them to Casablanca, and apparently Casablanca said, well, we've already got another band that looks a lot like them, and they didn't think that that they were doing anything.
What band was that?
More than I believe it's Black Oak Arkansas or something like that.
Okay.
Or a band that Tommy Aldridge was originally in,
right.
So, which
Ozzy was big fan of that band, I know, Black Oak Arkansas, because that was one of the reasons he sought out Tommy. He had seen Tommy play with that band, and I don't know if he was a big fan of the band, but he was a fan of Tommy Aldridge's work or drumming with that band. Yeah. Speaking of Ozzy, let's come back and talk a little bit about Black Sabbath. And as a fellow podcaster, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about just podcasting in general.
Sure.
So let's conquer those two subjects. But if you don't mind, Victor, I'd love to get into a little music right now. This is a guy who I'm friends with on Facebook, Tom Wallace, who Martin Popoff, another friend of mine on Facebook, had commented that Tom was a great drummer. And I just randomly friended Tom, which I don't do a lot of random friend requests on Facebook.
Right.
You're welcome to, you guys, you listeners out there, are welcome to send me a request. I'm at facebook.com/mstriegel. But anyways, Tom and I became friends on Facebook, and we've shared some conversations together in that forum. He ended up sending me his CD, which is just great. The band is Symbolic, and I would call them kind of progressive heavy metal. They're from San Diego, California. And let's check a little of their music out right now.
Memories remove. something for my gratitude. I am holding her right in my arms. I've been blinded by the morning star.
What you just heard was a song called Morning Star by a band called Mustache. Are you familiar with Mustache, Victor?
I actually am, and I would actually have to attribute that to Mr. Eric Bones of Steel.
Right.
Is that his name?
Yeah, a friend of mine. We're actually going to see Udo play on the 10th, Eric and I. Haven't seen Eric in a while. But yes.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. He introduced me to Mustache. Actually, the first time we hooked up in person, we met there at Bionic, and he gave me a CD that had different tracks that you guys had played that night. And on there was Mustache. And I remember he described them as he thought that they were like a newer version of the Cult, and said that they were the perfect band to just crank in your car and just drive.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Well, they have a new record out, and that song that we just heard, Morning Star, comes off of that record, which is called Sounds Like Hell, Looks Like Heaven. So definitely check those guys out. Before Mustache, we heard from Tom Wallace and his band Symbolic, Welcome to the Soulless World. Good stuff, Tom. Thanks for sending me that CD. And thanks to Victor from Mars Attacks for joining me here on Talking Metal, and I am joining him on Mars Attacks. It's a dual Mars Attacks Talking Metal episode. Victor, I wanted to get your opinion. There is a new Black Sabbath record on the way. Rick Rubin in the studio with them. The album, first off, the album's called 13. I'm confused as to what that means. I mean, 13 is a scary, unlucky number, but it's not the 13th Black Sabbath record. It's not the, as far as my counting goes, it's not the 13th record with Ozzy in Black Sabbath. Do you have any idea why it's called 13?
I believe it is because we are in 2013.
Yeah. Oh, that would make sense. That would make sense. But it's a little... It's a little confusing.
That's the only thing that that I sort of got out of watching this one video, that they were sort of undecided on the actual title.
Ah.
And they said something to the extent of someone had written down Black Sabbath 2013, and then they were like, sort of what you said, huh, 13 an unlucky number. Well, we'll go with that for now, and then we'll see, you know, if we change it or not in the end. But looks like it's going to be 13 from everything that they've said, although we know, as being big fans of Ozzy, that Ozzy's always played with album titles here and there, and then, you know, the album may not end up being what they originally said, or maybe, you know, what they said two or three times before the album came out, but we'll see. For now, as you mentioned, 13.
Yeah, and definitely it's an interesting point in history for all these guys, Ozzy, Tony, Geezer, and even Bill Ward, who's not involved in the album. I mean, we saw Sabbath get back together, the original Sabbath lineup get back together, you know, first without Bill Ward, and then Bill Ward joined, and they did that concert in Birmingham, which was released on CD. The reunion CD, that is, which was kind of the definitive lineup, finally getting back together with Bill Ward included, which is a fun listen, that record. And that record actually included two new songs, which I heard they actually had three new songs, but they only put two on the record.
Right.
And I don't know, those songs were okay at best, I think, and I believe that maybe Ozzy felt that same way. From what I understand, the songs were pretty much solely produced and written, or at least written and arranged by Tony and Ozzy. Geezer wasn't really involved very much in those songs, and I don't even think Bill plays on one of the songs, if I remember correctly.
No. The thing with this whole reunion, though, I know a lot of people are, you know, or it actually isn't a reunion because, you know, Bill isn't there. So it's, you know, three quarters of the lineup. But I'll say this. Bill is one of my all-time favorite drummers.
Right. Yeah.
Whenever there were any discussions as to, you know, who is your favorite drummer of the 70s, it was always Bill Ward, Peter Criss, and John Bonham for me.
Definitely, yeah.
You know, but similar to Peter Criss, and similar to what you've heard me say with Peter Criss in other podcasts, these guys wear down. You know, it's either genetics or it's, you know, living the good life all those years. But, you know, let's face it, Bill doesn't even play on his own solo albums. You know, on the one album that Ozzy guested on and Zakk Wylde guested on, Eric Singer played a lot of the drums on that.
Yeah.
The solo album that he released a few years ago, he had a different drummer on that. So, you know, if he's not even confident in his own playing for his own albums, then, you know, I don't understand why people are up in arms about him not being involved. I mean, I don't think it's a money I don't think it's a money issue where I think everyone is saying, well, you know, it's Sharon or whatnot, but I just think it comes down to, you know, the band realizing, you know what, we have this limited space of time to record. If we get in there with Bill, are we going to be done in the next 5 years? You know, let's not forget they started to record an album and they dropped all the material because they just couldn't get it done.
Yeah, now that was back. That was a while back, right? I mean, Rick Rubin was brought into the picture, like, when? Like, the 90s, right? Like, didn't they talk to Rick Rubin? Like, remember when they did that, there was that gig where, you know, it was after the Dehumanizer album had come out, and there was that gig that, you know, they were opening for Ozzy or something, and and Dio freaked out and Halford filled in, and then they went up and did four songs or something with Ozzy. I mean, and I think Bill Ward was in the picture then too for those songs. I mean, wasn't there talk of an album at that point with Rick Rubin possibly producing, or maybe shortly after it? I mean, I think
There absolutely was, and the next thing that we heard was Tony Martin, Tony Iommi, Geezer Butler, and Bobby Rondinelli with the Cross Purposes album.
Yeah, right.
So that sort of all fell by the wayside at that point in time. I don't believe that they actually sat down and recorded anything, and at that time, Ozzy was going to record with Rick Rubin, and things didn't work out either. That was after No More Tears, so that's for the Osmosis album, if I'm not mistaken. And they got back together with him after that reunion concert that you just mentioned a moment ago. They worked with Rick Rubin at that time, worked up like five or six songs, and they just said that they weren't up to snuff, and they each went their separate ways.
Yeah, and you know, before, let's see, they did the reunion of Ozzy, Geezer, and Tony took place on like Ozfest 97 or something. And what's interesting with that is Bill Ward wasn't involved with that, but Geezer, but Bill Ward was involved in touring with Tony and Geezer and Tony Martin shortly before that. And I always wondered, I mean, there was a small stretch, and I don't have the exact info in front of me right now, but I know that I believe some point possibly on the Forbidden Tour, Bill Ward ended up back in the band briefly for like a South American tour or some short tour. And it was always
It was South America.
Yeah. It was always thought that maybe Tony had told Ozzy, hey, Bill's just not up to it after doing that tour, and that's why they brought in Mike to play those initial reunion dates with Black Sabbath. Now, having said that, I hear what you're saying earlier about maybe his playing just isn't up to par for the reunion, and I originally thought that, but now I'm wondering if it actually was a money issue, because when they did the reunion record, they originally were having money issue discussions with Bill, and there were problems. And there's a story in Martin Popoff's Black Sabbath fact book that basically says that, okay, Bill was going to play that reunion show in Birmingham with them, but he was, I guess, due to money issues, saying that they would have to remove his parts from the live record, which they were actually considering doing, and having like Vinny or possibly Cozy Powell redo his parts in a studio setting. And the producer, one of the engineers or the producer said, this is going to be virtually impossible to do this because, you know, in a live setting, stuff is bleeding through, and there's, unless he plays every note exactly like Bill Ward did, which again is virtually impossible, there's no way to do it. And he basically, this producer guy, I forget his name, but he basically convinced Bill, hey, you know, just let it go. Let whatever issues you have go and just agree to be on the record, which he did. So having said that, there's been problems with Bill all along, and I you know, getting involved and in the mix. And I do believe that his playing isn't nearly what it once was. And like you said, those three drummers you mentioned, Peter Criss, John Bonham, and Bill Ward, I mean, in the 70s, the thing that's amazing, if you watch footage of them, the physical amount of energy that goes into their playing, I mean, how could somebody in their 50s or 60s have that energy that these guys had in their 20s, you know, or early 30s for that matter? You know, it's just I don't know. I mean, I do think there's some people that maybe could still have that energy, but I do think that it's tough the older you get to still have that physical presence behind the kit. But again, my guess is that Bill Ward probably wanted more money to be involved in this reunion, and I do think that is probably what happened. But I do also think that the fact that the guy just can't play. I mean, I saw Sabbath numerous times when they reunited with him, and I must say that he did get better as the years went on. But I remember seeing them for the first time with him out at, I think, Meadowlands in Jersey, and just really kind of scratching my head and realizing that there was just a lack of energy coming from the kit. And I know a lot of people will crucify me for saying that, but he did improve as things went on, and on later Ozfest dates, I actually did think he was a little better. But yeah, he doesn't have what he once had behind the kit. But right. I still think that there was probably money issues involved, and I don't know. We still don't know. No one's really come out and said either way what went wrong with those negotiations with Bill Ward and why he is not involved. Have we heard that from anybody?
No, I mean, he's stated money. The band has sort of, you know, said that they didn't want to talk about the issue, that it was, you know, somewhat personal. And the only thing that they really did do was pretty much say, hey, you know, this isn't a Sharon deal. We actually have, you know, four different managers involved. So it has nothing to do with Sharon, and she's only like, you know, a quarter of the input with regards to the band. So who knows if they'll ever, you know, divulge that information. And in the end, you know, as I've said a lot of times on my show, a lot of this comes down to relationships as well.
Yeah,
maybe
definitely.
Some of these guys really can't, you know, stomach one another after X amount of years. Who knows? Maybe it really is that Bill said, you know what, if I have to deal with these guys for, you know, the next 500 days, then I need this much money, you know?
Yeah.
So who knows? You know, hopefully one day, you know, or hopefully at least Martin Popoff will be able to pry some information from someone on the inside, and we'll actually know what took place.
Yeah, I mean, I do think one thing Martin Popoff said was that it's a shame Bill isn't involved. Not. I mean, he didn't say this exactly, but I'm kind of paraphrasing what he said. But because his songwriting has been really strong on his solo records that he's released, you know, over the past 20 years at this point. Those two solo records contain some really great songwriting on them, and it's a shame that Bill isn't involved as a songwriter. Martin didn't say anything about Bill's drumming. I don't know what his opinions are on that, but so anyways, let's right now go back to the beginning. This is the first song that the world ever heard by Black Sabbath. It's called Evil Woman.
Yeah.
Okay, there we have a little evil woman from Black Sabbath. As Mark said, the first thing that anyone ever heard by the band.
Yes, and they definitely got heavier after that. I mean, I do. That was a cover, actually, that song. But that is the first single by the band that was included on the Black Sabbath album, self-titled, first record in Europe, but not in America. So it is actually on one of those greatest hits, digitally remastered album packages that they put out a number of years back. It's really frustrating that you can't get the Ozzy era Black Sabbath stuff on iTunes or on Spotify, and I don't know why that is. Do you any ideas?
That's all Warner Brothers.
Yeah, Warner Brothers. Yeah, it's just it's very odd, very odd.
It is. I saw recently with Def Leppard is similar. They don't want to. I guess the deal they want to give the band is pretty inferior to what they want to sell their music digitally. So they're going back and re-recording some of their classic tracks and releasing those on iTunes. But you know, in the end, you could lightning is only going to strike once. You know, you're only going to get that perfect storm once, so it's very difficult to recapture every single nuance so that you can't, you know, really tell that it was re-recorded.
That re-recording stuff is fucking bullshit, man. I mean, the Scorpions did that. I mean, there was a guy who is actually a listener of Talking Metal who worked on this movie Rock of Ages, and he was talking about how when they approached the Scorpions to use their music, they were trying to sell them these new versions. You can maybe get close in re-recording the stuff, but it's never going to be the same. It's like you don't touch that stuff. I mean, that's a whole nother topic. I mean, I think even. I mean, you know, going back and trying to recapture that magic is virtually, I think, impossible. Going back and fucking with the magic like Dave Mustaine did with his, you know, 80s stuff and actually going back and re-recording parts and remixing and actually making those heavy records that Megadeth put out in the 80s less heavy, in my opinion, is another mistake. But that's a whole other topic maybe we'll get into on another podcast.
Sure.
Speaking of podcasting, Mars Attacks was gone for a while. Let's talk about that. You weren't posting a podcast, and there was a point in time where I was kind of scratching my head thinking, will there ever be another Mars Attacks podcast? But you are back now with some new episodes. And what was going on in the break? I know you had a pretty major, significant thing happen in your life with the birth of a son, right? Second son.
Yeah, it was birth of my second son. As you know, having two young kids under the age of two is a handful. had issues with work and started work on a house that we've owned for quite a few years and just doing all the paperwork and everything else that I had to do with that. I said, you know what, instead of doing a bunch of half-ass shows, which, you know, at best, maybe you can consider my shows to be half-ass, so let me just put it off to the side. Let me sort of set a date and say, okay, I'll be back by this time. And that date was always getting pushed back, and, you know, it was sort of do or die. I have to, you know, put an episode out. I have to put an episode out. And I did. I put it out, and I've got, I'm back to interviewing a bunch of people. I have quite a few interviews in the can that I've done over the course of the last week and a half and other stuff that I had saved up. And there will be a weekly episode from here on out for the foreseeable future anyway.
Okay, so. Good. It's a lot of work, you know, podcasting. Yeah. I mean, I know. I think sometimes the listeners... some of them get it, that it is a lot of work. Others tend to, you know, from what I read on blogs and message boards and stuff, think that what we do is just so easy and why can't we do more? Why can't we do this? Why can't we do that? And it takes effort, as any of these podcasters know. Yeah. I know. Now, one thing I wanted to ask you about is you're involved in like a group of podcasts. You might actually even need to plug them or something? Isn't that required?
Sure.
And now it's Iron Cities podcast, right? And it's like an app or something?
Well, sure. It actually started out by John Kadick of Iron City Rock sort of approached me. He said, you know, I'm putting together this network of podcasts. We're calling it the Cast Iron Ring. We're big fans of your show. You know, would you want to be involved? And I thought, all right, cool. You know, why not? It's just a way to sort of cross promote with other shows. There are some other cool shows on there as well, which you can find out on castironring.com. But, you know, and as time has gone by, there have been other people that have sort of approached us and stuff. And, you know, I've sort of actually been somewhat firm in. And if anyone wants to say, you know, anyone's been a dick or whatever about not accepting other people to come on, it actually has been me that sort of poo-pooed some of these other shows because, you know, with the advent of the internet, and this applies to me as well, you know, everyone has a voice and everyone thinks it's easy, as you're saying. But I think there are very few people out there that actually have the ability to determine whether what they're doing is of quality or not. You do need to spend a little money to have, you know, a decent setup so that it does sound a little professional. And I'm not saying that I sound, you know, 100% professional, but I do think that if you listen to other shows, there is a big difference. And there are going to be people that say what I do is shit. And, you know, I'm fully aware of that. And I have no problem with that. You know, everyone's entitled to their opinion, but I do think that, you know, there seems to have been a boom in the last 2 to 3 years where, you know, everyone thinks that they can do this, and you know, there are a lot of factors, as you're saying. There's a lot of work, there's a lot of commitment involved. You have to deal with you know, rejection a lot, with people not allowing you to interview their artists or not thinking that you're ready. You have to pursue artists. You know, there are certain artists that I've pursued for over a year and got them. There are others that I've pursued for more than that and still haven't spoken to them.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's like the artist thing. I mean, we're going to have to actually get into this on another show because I have to start work in about 5 minutes, but there's so much to talk about. Why don't we actually devote a whole show to just talking about podcasting in general, maybe next week or something. But I mean, the artist thing you mentioned, it's like, there's so many podcasts out there, and I'm talking just about hard rock, heavy metal podcasts, that it's like, I mean, how many podcasts do I have to hear Bruce Kulick on? I mean, it's like at this point, I can't bear to listen to another. And I love Bruce, but it's just like, I feel like there's overexposure. And it's like, even like we just had Saxon on our last podcast, and I hooked up with him in New York. I always prefer doing these interviews in person for a number of reasons, that generally just they sound better, and I don't have good access to record these interviews on the phone anymore without having to spend my own money. But that's a whole other story. But anyway, Saxon, I interviewed them, but they'd already been on, not only were they on Eddie Trunk the week before on Sirius, but, you know, they were on like, you know, six other different podcasts. And it's just like, I just feel like no one cares. No one. I mean, you know, I love Saxon. We care about Biff, but no one wants to hear six interviews with Biff. You know, it's like,
right, exactly.
And I just feel like I don't know. I'm just rethinking everything at this point as far as podcasting goes. I mean, we got in Talking Metal got in 2005 when everybody thought podcasting was going to be, you know, the next radio. I really feel like Adam Curry, you know, he invested millions, possibly millions of dollars into it, and it didn't really go anywhere. Now, I feel like within the last couple years, there's been kind of, like you mentioned, and I'm not talking about just heavy metal, hard rock podcasts, just podcasting in general, there's kind of been a second wave of excitement about podcasting. And I think Adam Carolla's podcasting network, where he's just going all in, and a lot of these comedy guys, you know, Mark Maron and Duncan Trussell and stuff are doing well with their podcast and going all in. I don't know how much money they're making podcasting. I don't think that much. I mean, Mark Maron, you know, he does a podcast out of his garage in California and he gets stars on, but I don't think he made any money off the actual podcast. Very little, actually. And, you know, now he's doing a show actually where I work that's about him doing his podcast. And I think that's what he's making the money off of, you know.
Right.
And let's face it. We all want to make some money doing what we love, but I just don't know. I mean, even Eddie Trunk, because, you know, I think a lot of us podcasters are like, maybe if we do this well enough and long enough, Sirius will come to us and offer us a show. But, you know, I listened to Eddie Trunk on Sirius, and he did it again last Monday. He made a point at saying, I make hardly any money doing this, he said on Sirius. And you know, Howard Stern's making millions of dollars, but we know Eddie Trunk is not making that much money, or so he claims on Sirius. I mean, I don't know what they pay him to do his show. I can't, it probably 50 grand a year, maybe 30 grand a year. But then he goes and he does these appearances, like he goes and does the Shiprock, or not Shiprock, Monsters of Rock cruise, and they probably pay him 5, 6, maybe even 10 grand to go host the Monsters of Rock weekend on the boat. And I think that's where he's making his money. But, you know, so I don't know. It's all, and I know there's some people now that are listening saying, oh, this is bullshit. You should be doing it because you love it. And listen, we are, but do we aspire to be something more than just, you know, podcasters? And, you know, John and I got a little taste of making money when we did the Fuse show. I mean, they paid us pretty well for the amount of work, actually really well for the amount of work we did for them. But as far as making money just off the podcast or the dream of turning it into something bigger than it is, I don't know. I'm just kind of frustrated with the whole state of podcasting lately. I think what the Iron City guys are doing and you're doing with them is interesting. I do the one thing I like that you've kept your RSSs separate on iTunes, whereas I know Metal Injection, the one problem I always had with them on iTunes is, you know, they do a podcasting ring like that too. But when you sign up, you get all these different podcasts hitting you over the same feed, which I don't like, you know, because I might like Mars Attacks, but I might not like one of the other Iron City podcasts, you know, so I don't want to want that hitting my feed. But I do like the idea of the app, which like Corolla does and this ForceCats.net actually does, which is Star Wars related podcasts, where you can get all those podcasts. And maybe that's what the Iron City app does. I don't know. I suggest.
Yeah, they actually have their own app, which is Iron City Rocks app. But then, yeah, they have the Cast Iron Ring one that it pretty much just lists every show that's involved, gives you links to the iTunes feed, so that you could sign up right from there.
But you can't listen to the shows on the app, or can you? You can listen to the shows on the app?
No, you have to. You still have to use the podcasting feature within, at least within the iPhone.
Which, like, what, bounces you over to the podcasting app?
Yeah, that's exactly what it does.
That sounds like, I don't know, I wouldn't invest money. See, I'm thinking, basically, that sounds kind of lame to me. I wouldn't invest money in an app unless you're going to be able to listen to the shows on the app itself, which, knowing how frustrated people are with the actual podcasting app that's on the iPhone, I don't know. Part of me is wondering, do I do a Talking Metal app? Do I do, like, go back to Mark Striegel Radio, do an app, and, you know, where I'm feeding a bunch of different podcasts out, including Talking Metal and Mark Striegel Radio Show and whoever else, you know, wants to do a show for it. I don't know. I'm just, like, mixed up as to where podcasting's going and what the future is in podcasting. And for even, I mean, I hate to say it, but even for Talking Metal, I mean, it's, where do I go with Talking Metal at this point? Do I just keep doing it because I like doing it, even though there's other things I like doing too? Or is it, you know, if I can't get it to the next level, when do I ever give it up, or do I kind of just keep it there and keep it going? These are all questions I'm kind of just dealing with personally right now.
Yeah.
I mean, where do you want to go with Mars Attacks?
The first thing that I always thought when I first started doing the first show, you know, when you sort of first gave me that kick in the ass to start to do it, was, well, if this ever becomes a chore, I no longer want to do it. You know, right. I have no problem putting time into it and whatnot, but I don't ever want it to get to a point where it's, I have to interview who now? You know, I don't dig so-and-so's music, but I have to play them.
Yeah, I'm in a situation with that right now with an artist that Gibson guitarist wants me to interview. And it's like, I don't even freaking know the band that much, and I don't like the band that much, you know. But, yeah.
So, I mean, and that was sort of when I was away, there was always doubt in my mind, you know, do I continue this? You know, is there an audience? You know, am I still having fun with this? And fully knowing exactly what you mentioned with Eddie Trunk, I've listened to Eddie Trunk since I was 13 years old, and hearing him say, hey, you know, I'm working 4 different jobs and I'm, you know, barely scraping by. So I've always pretty much sort of thought that, you know, it'd be almost impossible for me to see any type of monetary return, but who knows, you know, as you're saying, stranger things have happened.
Right,
but,
right.
Again, you know, as long as it's fun, as long as I can, you know, I think bring interesting shows to people and, you know, do some decent interviews, then, you know, I'll continue to do it. I've never, and this I think is the mistake that a lot of people make, is to say, oh, well, you know what, I'm going to do something better than talking metal. You know, I've never thought, no, you know, I'm not going to sit here and compete with you guys, A, because, I mean, obviously I think you guys are on a different level than I am, but I think there are so many other things that people can bring to the table,
right,
that there's no reason why, you know, people can't listen to talking metal and listen to Mars Attacks and take different things away from each show. What sucks
Well, that's
is that
the other thing I have issues with. I just don't have time to listen to all these other shows.
Yeah,
but
I'm with you.
Yeah. Speaking of time, man, let's continue this conversation in another episode, because I actually have to jump on to work, real work, that is, the way I pay my bills. So visit talkingmetal.com. We'd appreciate a PayPal donation if you have any spare change lying around, or you want to buy a t-shirt. And also visit, what is it, MarsAttacksPodcast.com?
MarsAttacksRadio.com. And I will say that I am actually wearing a Talking Metal t-shirt right now.
Excellent.
So.
There you go. Cool. All right, Victor, let's catch up soon. Let's maybe play another Sabbath tune to take us out. What do you want to hear?
Supernaut.